Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
And so, we're on the air. Let's see how the broadcast gets from the studio to your home.
99.1 FM. CJAM.ca. Kojiko Digital Cable 285. We are CJAM 99.1 FM. Reaching higher ground in Windsor, Detroit, and beyond.
Radio, I tell you, radio is a world that has to be believed to be seen.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio Show on CJAM 99.1 FM. A very warm welcome for everyone taking some time out of their day to tune in today. I am Erin.
And my name is Marie, and we'll be your host for today on behalf of Pro Bono Students Canada. If you weren't able to catch Magna Carta's episode last Friday with Michael and Natalie, thank you again for listening in. They discussed the Windsor Downtown Mission ID Clinic, which assists homeless or marginally housed clients in obtaining identification. If you weren't able to catch the show, you can also give it a listen on CJAM's website, which is www.cjam.ca, and their show would be located in the archives.
Now, before we begin, I'd like to give a quick disclaimer. Anything said on this show is the opinion of those people only and does not reflect the opinions of CJAM as a radio station. Also, both Marie and myself are students at the University of Windsor Faculty of Law, so we are not lawyers, and nothing we say should be construed as giving legal advice.
And also, since this is our first time hosting this show, let's just give you a quick introduction about ourselves. So I'm originally from Toronto. I did my undergrad at Carleton in Ottawa, and now this year I've moved here to Windsor to pursue law. So far, it's been great. Windsor definitely has some of the best pizza I've ever had, so I certainly cannot complain about that.
Yes, that's true. Windsor is well known for its pizza. I've lived here most of my life. Maybe a few other places a little bit, but mostly Windsor for sure. I did my undergrad here, worked for a bit, and now I'm back to pursue a law degree. It's been a good time so far. I'm happy to be in the second year, so about halfway done till we write the bar. Now, we're both volunteers with Pro Bono Students Canada. For anyone who hasn't heard about PBSC, it's the first pro bono organization in Canada. This show is just one of the many programs that PBSC organizes. The organization aims to help train future lawyers with practical experience while increasing access to justice and promoting pro bono work within the profession, which is a very important thing that all lawyers should, you know, participate in at some point, I believe. All projects you hear about on Magna Carta are run by students under the supervision of a lawyer.
So today we are very excited to be discussing the work that our pro bono volunteers are doing this year with Windsor Women Working with Immigrant Women, which is also known as the W5 organization. It's a nonprofit organization and is committed to understanding and realizing the needs that new Canadians have that are not always being met by the existing programs and services in Windsor specifically. The organization exists because it was made apparent to the government that there was certainly a need for an information center, to deal with problems encountered by immigrant people, foreign students, and workers in Canada. Since this realization, the center has continued to extend its outreach and programs. So you can visit W5, the organization, at 1368 Olette Avenue in downtown Windsor.
So before we get into any more detail about W5 and the pro bono organization, I'd just like to give you all listening some interesting statistics that I found about immigration in Canada. I think this will further contextualize what we're about to speak about to the volunteers today. So this is all from a statistics. I think these were this one's a Statistics Canada report from 2015 titled Women in Canada, a Gender-Based Statistical Report. So there's some really cool stuff here. This one here states that there's actually been a decrease in the percentage of women being admitted as spouses and dependents in the economic class, and an increase in women as the principal applicant under the economic class. So it sounds to me like fewer women are coming in as dependents, yeah, and more coming in as the economic class, which is actually really interesting. So the report also looked at voting patterns and found that immigrant women were less likely than Canadian-born women to have voted in the last federal, provincial, and municipal elections, which I think that speaks to maybe less power and influence with like elective representatives. So perhaps like a push to encourage more people to vote might be better to have their interests heard by our parliament. Immigrant women take longer to integrate into the labor force compared to immigrant men. So that's interesting. They list several factors, including family responsibilities, ability to converse in a local language, and other settlement issues. Immigrant women are also more likely to work part-time than men. So they seem to be in a more precarious position in general compared to both Canadian-born women and immigrant men.
I feel like this speaks a lot to just like the gender roles that are just like so like ingrained in society, and it's even worse for women immigrating here because they're just kind of, if they have children, it's kind of not a question whether they can go to work. It's more so they have to stay home to take care of the children and take on that role. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. The report also found that immigrant women had fewer social connections than Canadian-born women. So I think that speaks to that really well. Like, a lot of them didn't have the same social network. And it takes time to build that network, but also, you know, not having those connections definitely makes it harder to...
Yeah, they don't have that same network of employee, like, relationships. And the language barrier, of course, makes that even worse. So they can't just, like... It's not so easy always to find someone who also speaks the same language and create these connections with other people. So
true. They talked about education here. So immigrant women were more likely than Canadian-born women to have completed a university certificate or degree at the bachelor's level or above. So that's interesting. I think that that probably speaks to like women who come here in the economic class, because like the government's looking for people who have a university degree, for instance. I'll make it more likely that they accept anyone who applies. So that might be a reason why. I think that also helps negate some stereotypes that people might have, thinking that people who immigrate may not have the same like educational background as those in Canada, but in fact they tend to have a stronger background, educational background, than Canadians. Place of origin is also something the report looked at. So we see here that since the 1970s, there were changes in Canada's immigration programs to build on economic, social, and humanitarian goals. And along with changes like internationally that have affected migration of peoples, we see today there are more people from Asia and the Middle East who report their place of birth. So that's same for female immigrants. The majority, or at least the largest number, are from Asia and the Middle East. And most female immigrants do belong to a visible minority group. So I think it says here what 60% did, which is higher compared to Canada's population. So that's, I think, another factor that might stigmatize people.
Right.
At the same time, you're an immigrant, female, visible minority. We know that all these things make it hard to, for instance, like access legal services, access justice, etc.
Sure. So another issue that we wanted to touch on is the violence that newcomer women experience, which is obviously a major issue. And so in our research, some of the things that we saw were, for example, the conditional permanent residence, which was implemented by the government, the federal government, in 2012, and basically sponsored spouses and partners who came to Canada without any children in common had to stay in a relationship with their partners for at least 2 years. And if they left this relationship, their residence would be revoked and they could be deported. So it was basically implemented by the government to deter people from establishing permanent residence in Canada through a sponsor and not actually having intentions to stay with their partner. So, yeah, it's not really fair to punish everyone for the things that only some people would do. And it was crazy. I was like, in my research, I came across this this like campaign that was that came about during this time, and it was basically, it was launched by Immigration Canada, and it was basically to show that like marriage fraud is like this major issue. And yeah, it was like one of those very dramatic documentaries where like the screen's all like dark, like the people are turned around, and yeah, like the like music to make things seem so much
scary,
so much more dramatic than they are. And it was just crazy to like see that in, like, not to say that it's not an issue, because of course like we should be concerned about that, but the bigger issue is concerned about like what this kind of legislation can do to women, like what kind of vulnerability that opens them up to. And I think that's a much bigger issue, definitely, than being scammed into marriage. So on a brighter side, in April of 2017, the Trudeau government eliminated the status of conditional permanent residency to uphold like family reunification and to support gender equality. So yeah, that was a major win. But still, it just, there's still just so many issues within that field that need to be addressed. And although that stopped the conditional permanent residence, it didn't fix all of the problems.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's a really good example of a law that on its face seems like neutral, it's not going to be a problem, it's actually helping fix an issue, but once it's applied, it has a negative effect on like group of people,
right?
Especially a group of people that don't really have that much of a say. So like newcomers, female, mostly women, I think, were affected by this, newcomers to Canada. So it's definitely good that it's been abolished, I think.
And a statistic I found, so in 2012, 134 people were removed from Canada for misinterpretation. So of these 134 people, some of them were because of marriage fraud. The number is not exactly clear. So like take that number in against like the number that we don't really have, because domestic abuse is so unreported and like getting those statistics is so hard. But like it's going to be a lot more than 100 or whatever it is that is like the marriage fraud number. Yeah. So,
Yeah. And even like thinking about domestic abuse, I know there was like the exception. So women who are men, but who are experiencing domestic abuse didn't have to stay with their partners. But at the same time, like who is going to actually come forward and say, when you're in that position,
exactly,
it's a difficult position. You just came to Canada. You're probably don't have that many connections in Canada. Might not be your first language. I think it's very difficult for people to come forward, even when they are like in a more privileged position in society. So for someone who is new to Canada, I think that would be very difficult to do.
Yeah, exactly. Like the exception was supposed to be like a safeguard. Like, oh, well, we have this legislation, but it's okay because there's this exception. But it's an exception that's very limited in that does not apply to especially people in these kinds of vulnerabilities. So yeah, just an example of the legislation that is not properly thought out, yeah. I would argue.
And, like, honestly, even if you're not in a position where there's domestic abuse going on, if you're here and you in Canada with a partner and you know what, things don't work out, like, shouldn't you be able to leave? I'm not sure you should be stuck with someone who you don't want to be with anyway.
Yeah.
So and then there's, like, that to think about, yeah.
Yeah, and then it's like, if you do decide, like, okay, I'm not going to be with them, then you get deported. And
yep.
And then I get another thing, like, that could be used, like, within the relationship. If there's abuse already going on, like, that's something that the spouse could be saying, like, oh, like, well, you can't do anything because, you know,
you're gonna get deported.
You might be, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's terrible. But at least it was struck down. So that's one step in a good direction for sure.
Yeah, I would love to see what the volunteers that we're going to be speaking to have to think about the conditional permanent residence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be something that comes up. I mean, I guess not anymore since 2017, but just...
And, like, their experience with the immigrant woman who they work with and how that may have affected them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
actually, I think one of the volunteers, she was volunteering last year with W5, so she probably was, like, there when this, like, legislation was being, like coming
it?
To, sorry?
What year was it?
2017 is when it was eliminated, and so she was working at W5 last year, so I wonder if she, like, came.
That's a good point.
You know, like, if this was something that they experienced.
Okay.
Talked about, you know?
Well, let's ask them some of that.
Yeah. We'll have to try that.
So we're going to take a really short break, and we'll be right back. We're going to be interviewing Tasha and Colleen. They're both pro bono student volunteers this year with W5.
All right. See you after the break, guys.
Hello. We are Peer Reviewed.
My name is Asma.
And my name is Zoha. Our show aims to showcase the amazing STEM research and activities that are being done at the University of Windsor. And when we say STEM, we mean science, technology, engineering, and math.
On this show, we will interview faculty and grad students about the exciting research they have done. And you won't have to have a degree in rocket science to understand it. So listen to us on Mondays at 12:30 and again during the week.
You can find us online at your leisure at CJAMCA and in podcast form if you want to take us on the go.
The more you know, the more your neurons grow.
So stay tuned.
Welcome back to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio. You're listening to CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit. I'm Marie.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome back to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit. I'm Marie.
And I'm Erin.
And we're back with our pro bono student volunteers, Colleen and Tasha, from the W5 Pro Bono Project. So ladies, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Tasha Stansbury. I'm a 2L law student, single GED. I have been working with PBSC since first year, so last year and this year as well. Last year I was just a volunteer with the W5 project, and this year I'm the volunteer coordinator. So I kind of liaise between the student volunteers and the organization itself.
Right. Awesome.
And my name is Colleen Dermody. I'm a 1L single JD at Windsor Law and a new member of the W5 PBSC Windsor Initiative, and loving it so far.
Awesome.
Oh, very nice. So can I ask you two, what made you want to volunteer with PBSC?
Yeah, so I'm in my first year of law school, and I'm the kind of person that needs to get involved in whatever I'm doing at school. I need to have a human connection in whatever work that I'm doing so I can be fully engaged in what I'm learning. And it's easy to become disconnected in law school when you're up to your ears in readings.
Oh, I feel you. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's all readings.
Exactly. Got to do those when I get home. so I went to the PBSC information session a few weeks ago, and Harvey Strasberg, who's a local lawyer in Windsor, gave an amazing talk to us, the thesis of that talk being that pro bono isn't just about delivering free legal services, it's about delivering services with integrity and honor.
Mm.
And those words really struck me, and it made me want to be a part of the org.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And Tasha, how about yourself?
Yeah. So I before I came to Windsor Law, I have a background in social justice activism, like grassroots activism in particular. I did my BA in equity studies at U of T, so I'm a big, big social justice nerd. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, that's part of why I chose to come to Windsor specifically, because there's the social justice focus here and there's so many opportunities to do work with the communities outside of the academic aspect, pretty similar to Colleen. I really like engaging with the community. I like feeling like my work is making a difference. I like applying what I'm learning in school to real life situations kind of before I graduate, you know, get in as soon as possible, not only for my own career, but also just to be able to start helping people as soon as I can. And PBSC was a really good place for me to do that. And I want to do a lot of pro bono work when I do become licensed. And I figured I would get started as soon as possible. And here I am.
Yeah, I think it's a really great opportunity because, like, in my first year, I didn't really do much extracurricular things. And now in my second year, I'm feeling like, oh, you know, I really need to try, like, actually apply what I'm learning. So PBSC gives a great opportunity for, like, students to get out there and see what it's like to, like, be a lawyer and help others who really do need services that aren't being, you know, provided enough for them.
Okay, so another question. Why did you guys choose the project? Like, was there any special significance for either of you for why you wanted to pick W5?
Yeah, so I was just really hoping to be a part of PBSC in any capacity at all, but I was particularly hoping to be placed with W5 because I did my master's in public administration and thank you. And during my master's, I focused a lot of my research on workplace health and safety standards for seasonal agricultural workers working under the Canadian Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program, or CSOP. So I was particularly examining the barriers SAWs face when trying to obtain permanent residency status in Canada. And I was also focusing on the specific and critical needs of the few women SAWs in the program because they have a pretty disturbing high incidence of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and exploitation while working on farms participating in CSOP. So this research combined with, my interest in advocating for newcomers to Canada is why W5 was so appealing to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, that's very relevant, I think, to the Windsor area, too, like with the Leamington workers, right? Like, I don't know too much about the issue, but it's definitely, like, something that Windsor, Essex, and I guess that's Leamington, too, right? I'm not quite sure, but it's, like, really relevant here. What the, so the woman who you, like, were studying with or did research with, like, were they also kind of from the same background as the men who were working here? Do they all come together? Was, like, a separate...
So most people participating in the CSOP come from Mexico and Jamaica, kind of more like Caribbean, Latin American countries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so yeah. It's interesting. A lot of these people, it's mostly men in the program, but most people who are participating in the program will come work on farms or canneries in Ontario, all provinces, actually, during the harvesting season for like 25 seasons, and they still cannot get status. So,
crazy.
Tasha, how about yourself? What made you, what's the special significance for you here?
So part of why I wanted to go to law school was specifically to do immigration law. So my mom is an immigrant. She came over from Lebanon during the civil wars in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And so I have been raised in an immigrant family. I'm very close with my mom's side of the family. Mm-hmm. So growing up, I didn't really realize that certain experiences that my family was having were kind of on the margins of society, and they were challenges that is unique to immigrants because it was just my normal. As a second-generation immigrant, you don't necessarily realize what parts of your experience are related to your family's immigration status and what parts of it are, you know, inherently more Canadian and what parts are a fusion of the two. I also am currently going through researching immigration. My partner lives in the States, so we're going through that as well right now. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of background interest in immigration law just in my own personal life. I'm really, really interested in multiculturalism overall and the richness that immigrants bring to Canadian society and the importance of staying connected with one's cultural groups even though you know, you've moved to somewhere new.
Yeah, for sure.
And also being able to, just like being able to connect with other people who share a similar experience. So I actually knew someone who worked at W5. I had a contact in Windsor before then, and I heard about their kind of programming before I came here. And as soon as I saw that PBSC did a project with them, that was my goal, and I got it. I loved conducting the interviews last year. It was awesome. So many beautiful experiences. And it was really interesting also to, like, I mean, we'll talk more about the project itself later, but it was really interesting to, we have to compare and contrast the different experiences that we record in the interviews. Mm-hmm. So being able to pick out, like, oh, yeah, I totally identify with that, and that seems familiar, and that's something my mom would say, or, you know, something my grandmother would say, something like that. It's been really fulfilling for me personally, and I look forward to working with them more in the future, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, that's great that you have, like, the personal connection to it, I think.
Yeah.
That, so you can really relate to, like, what the women are experiencing. You see that in your mother and your grandmother, you know, et cetera. Let's talk about then, like, what you guys actually do at W5, like, some of your duties. I'm not sure, because you're this volunteer coordinator, right, Tasha? So I'm not sure if you have different duties, but maybe we can elaborate on that for Colleen.
Yeah, so I want to talk about W5 itself.
Oh, yeah. First off. Please, go ahead.
So this is like pretty much straight off their website. But so W5 stands for Windsor Women Working with Immigrant Women. It's a nonprofit organization that was formed in 1982 by a group of women in the city of Windsor who basically saw that there was a lack of services for immigrant women specifically and their unique experiences. So they brought this lack of services, they brought that fact to the attention of the government of Canada, and through a grant application in 1981. So they did a feasibility study, basically just showing the government that, like, you know, this is something that we could reasonably do. And it was conducted with the objective of determining the needs of new Canadians in Windsor. So just trying to figure out, you know, what are the gaps in the services and how can we fill those gaps? So in 1982, another grant was obtained for the purpose of holding a conference to discuss the immigrant needs. So, you know, doing further research and follow up on the results generated by the first study. So that conference had participants from all over Canada. And that basically just came, they came to the conclusion that they needed a center, like a building with services that were located in there to deal with the problems encountered by immigrant people, foreign students, foreign workers in Canada. So in July 1983, an Immigrant Women's Information Center was open with funding from a CCDP grant, the Canada Employment Center. And then the center has continued to develop its programs and really extend its reach over the years. W5 does incredible work. They do a lot of education, a lot of advocacy. They do childcare, a lot of workshops for kids, workshops for newcomers, computer classes. They have a startup program for people who want to start up small businesses, English language courses, just like awesome, really, really awesome education and advocacy work. They have homework services for immigrants' kids as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So if people need help with their English homework or whatever, you can get tutoring, homework help, and just stuff like that. So it really seems like when you look at their website, if you don't really know anything about, like, the immigrant experience, I guess, it just kind of looks like a random list of things. Like, where's the organization in this? But it's cool to look at it and be like, you can see the initiatives and be like, someone said, you know, we need this. And someone else was like, yeah, okay, we can do that. And it's just
nice,
like, it's awesome. Just like building up one idea at a time. And
it's a small office. It's a small room.
Yeah.
But a lot of stuff goes down.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff, yeah. Are there a lot of volunteers, like other people you work with, I guess, besides the other pro bono volunteers, right?
So we work mostly with the organizers. So we work with Trish, who's the kind of the main coordinator. And we also work with Gak, who does the computer classes, and Leela D, who does the startup program. So we basically have been going in during their classes and pulling people out during or after their classes and kind of pulling people out one at a time while they're doing kind of independent work and just doing the interviews really quick in that context.
Yeah. Well, that's a very valuable resource that they provide, like, especially for Windsor. I would say it's a bit of an immigration hub. Like, there's lots of,
oh my God, definitely.
For sure.
Erin, you're taking a course on that right now, right?
Immigration, yeah.
Right.
I'm definitely not an expert, but learning a little bit about it.
Definitely in that class with you.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but yeah, it's a really, I don't know, I really enjoy the subject, learning about it, so I think first show was with the W5 is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you want, I guess we already talked a little bit about your duties. Anything else you want to elaborate on, like that you do there?
So my responsibilities involve going to the W5 office when the women are in, whether English classes, computer classes, et cetera. We take women out of those classes and meet with them one-on-one. And we just ask them pretty open-ended questions, comparative questions, comparing their experience with the legal system back in their home country, and comparing that with their perceptions and experience with the legal system in Canada, whether that be police officers, lawyers, judges, the law in general. And it's pretty interesting what we discover. These ladies love to talk. So, we get some really great information with them. It's really nice to make connections with these women and mm-hmm. hear their stories and hear their struggles. Right. So we're very grateful to learn from them.
Yeah, and at the end of the year, the volunteers are responsible for putting together a memo that we can give back to the organization that basically helps them see what kind of progress they're making and where there are still maybe some gaps. Mm-hmm. And the questions are it's a pretty good mix of questions. So sometimes it's about what legal services were provided to you when you arrived. Sometimes it's about, you know, what do you know about whatever topic? There's one part in particular that asks the women to evaluate how much they trust different members of the legal system here, whether it's lawyers, police, judges, stuff like that, compared to back home specifically. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, we got some really interesting results last year. Hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure how much you can speak to it. Like, do you find there's a pattern there?
Yeah, there definitely is. So overall, what I found last year was that there is a lot more trust in the Canadian system. But interestingly, the longer that they've been here, mm-hmm. the less trust there is. Yeah, so the newer immigrants were like 5 out of 5 for everything, no matter what. And then there was one lady who had lived it. She had immigrated from the States, and she lived here since she was about 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you know what? It's not much better here than in the States. There's mm-hmm. still a lot of work to do. And everything, every experience within those two ranges kind of really fit the pattern, which was super interesting.
Oh, huh.
And there's a lot of trust in judges. Like, even when there's less trust for lawyers and cops, there's a lot of trust in judges, which I found very interesting.
Yeah,
maybe it's just because they interact with judges less, that it's just like the kind of ideal. I don't know. But it was an interesting consistency and inconsistency, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Maybe they see them as more impartial. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I can't really speak to it. We don't really ask them to. They do sometimes elaborate on why.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's just like they've come from a really traumatic experience back home where, you know, justice is almost impossible to access at all. And they mm-hmm. come here and they're like, oh, you know, a police officer will actually maybe listen to me and at least take a report if I report something.
Yeah.
Regardless of what they do with that, it's still a much better experience than what they have back home. So, yeah.
So other than that, is there anything else that has been shocking that you've learned so far, or something that's affected you in a way that you didn't think it would affect you?
I was hoping you would ask this question.
Oh.
So something that struck me when I was interviewing a woman from Nigeria last week, she was one of those interviewees where she loves to talk about the why to all of the responses to our questions, which is great. And she said, back home, you pay for justice. And I thought that was really, really profound, especially coming from a woman where she says herself it's a very patriarchal society,
right.
Where not a lot of women are working. You don't have a lot of economic power or influence. And she says, if you don't have money, if you don't have power, if you don't know people in high places, you won't get justice, even if you have every reason to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So that really struck me last week. And I was at the W5 office doing interviews today, and I was reflecting with Victoria, one of the other volunteers who I have the pleasure of working with. And we were saying after our interviews were done, like, these women have no reason or obligation to give us the why to their responses.
Mm-hmm.
But they do anyways. They don't know us, but they just open up about their stories. And I am so grateful that I get to be on the receiving end of those stories. And I'm very grateful that they trust us with their stories. And yeah, it's just a privilege to be able to hear from these women's experiences.
I think that says a lot about you guys too, though, like that you give them that trust that they're like so willing to give to, you know, like, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No problem.
I think one of the things that struck me the most, and this is not new, this continues to strike me whenever I talk to immigrants, is how even if there's a language barrier, they want to talk, they want to try, mm-hmm. they want to communicate their story in any way that they can, in any words that they know, even if they have to simplify it, even if they have to slow it down. They want to tell us, and you know, people want to communicate their stories, and especially if there's something that they've struggled with. It's important to get people's stories out there, and it's important to take the extra time. We actually, at one point last semester, decided to sit down and be like, okay, we've already put the questions in very simple language, but we need to break it down even more. Mm-hmm. Because some of these women, English is their third or fourth language, and they've been learning it for 6 months, and that, you know, that's all they have. Mm-hmm. So even just being able to break it down so that they can understand each question and just be able to answer yes or no, just to be able to recognize and validate their voices and have those voices included in our study. Mm-hmm. Because if we're only talking to the women who already know English and already can more or less understand how to access the services that are available in Canada, then we're, you know, erasing a really big part. So what we've done this year as well is try to, we've provided the W5 organizers with listed the languages that the different volunteers speak. So we have an Italian speaker, Colleen, you know that, and we have like French speakers and Arabic.
Wow,
and
awesome.
Yeah, so it's been really awesome so far, and I think you guys were telling me that Yvonne was really great with the translations on the first day.
It was a very impromptu translation, but she crushed it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's awesome. Like, just being able to open the lines of communication a little bit more, we're really working towards that. Yeah.
That's a really good point you make about like getting other people's stories out there who otherwise might not be able to get it. I think that's really awesome. You mentioned language barriers. Do you want to elaborate on that, or are there other like barriers that the women you find are facing in society?
Big question. Go ahead.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Every woman we speak with is at a different kind of stage in their immigration experience. Like, some women have only been here for a few months. Others have been here for a decade. And everybody has a different status. So we interview people who are landed immigrants and their partners already have jobs. Or today I was interviewing a woman who is making a refugee claim. And depending on where you are in your status, mm-hmm. There are definitely different challenges that arise. So especially if you're applying for refugee status, there's a huge, huge backlog at the Immigration and Refugee Board. I read an article last week that now the backlog is at about 64,000 claims, which means that you're waiting up to 2 years mm-hmm. for a hearing. And I was speaking with one woman during an interview last week who said that her hearing had been delayed again. So just that uncertainty and the constant delays of how your hearing is going to go, it can be very stressful, especially when your family is here with you too.
Yeah. And perfectly to jump off that point, I think in terms of language barriers, one of the biggest things is a lot of the women come here with their husbands. Their husbands mm-hmm. get work permits. And then the women either stay at home with the kids, or because they don't have the language, they stay at home regardless and are unable to kind of access the wider community except for whoever they can connect with who also speaks their language while, you know, their husbands are out communicating with people and being able to practice their language skills and working mm-hmm. and stuff. So there is... That's one of the things that I love about W5, being able to connect women who might feel a little bit more isolated in a new country to services, both in terms of the social connection with other immigrants, but also the connection with new skills that they can develop in order to better be able to live in Canada.
Yeah, and especially connecting them with the ample resources legal services in Windsor.
Yeah.
Today I was interviewing a woman from India, and I was able to give her some information about the CLA clinic downtown and Legal Assistance of Windsor, and she didn't know that that existed, so it was really nice to be able to kind of guide her in that direction if she ever needed to access those resources.
Yeah, that's good. And there's also a really big lack of information that's given about the services, just in terms of like making that information available. Like, I was talking to a woman last year, I remember, in this interview, she called 911 because there was a leak in her roof and she didn't know who else to call. You know, like, they don't they don't tell you, you know. Before I started law school, I don't know who to call if there's a leak in my roof. I've never had to deal with that issue. I've never had, you know, I've never had a shady landlord because I've lived with my parents pretty much until I came here. So, yeah, it just, I think that, like, being able to not only access the services themselves, but access information about the services and know that the services are available, because people don't know. And even people who've lived in Canada their whole lives don't know. So, yeah.
So there's like a, there's a tremendous access to justice
element of what
you're doing, which is awesome. I think. That's very good. Very in line with University of Windsor.
Oh, yeah.
This is a bit, I'm just curious. Like, so the woman that you work with, they're from all different backgrounds, obviously. Is that a barrier to them, like, working with each other, speaking with each other in the organization? Or do they, like, just, they get along pretty well? Or
every time I've seen them interact, it's been just, like, so beautiful. So
all these new connections are making.
That's great. I remember watching a conversation between two ladies last year, and they didn't speak the same language, and English was both their second language, and they spoke very little English, but they were, like, each communicating in very broken English in their own, like, in each of their accents. And I was like, this is so That's sweet and heartwarming. Just like, and just having such a cute little conversation about their kids. And yeah, it was adorable. I mean, I don't know. I'm not there every day, but as far as I know, like, it just seems like they want to connect with each other.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, that's so nice. Women supporting women.
Yes.
Oh, preach it, sisters. Preach it.
So is there any other differences between, like, the experiences that the women face versus, like, men that you guys have noticed in your work?
Sure. This is kind of more of a personal reflection, but I'm just thinking about my dad's immigration experience coming from Ireland as a white, cis, English-speaking male, and kind of the privileges that come with that in terms of finding employment and finding a place to live, and just in comparison with some of these women that we interview who come with their kids, who don't know English, who don't have a lot of skills because they've been spending most of their recent years raising their families, and it's just kind of interesting seeing how it's much easier, in my opinion, for men to take advantage of all the new opportunities that Canada, a new life in Canada can provide, and how women can kind of get sidelined from those opportunities if they're primarily helping or focusing on their children's settlement experience.
Another thing that I found, which was, it is included in our questions, and it was last year, trying to gauge the women's understanding of domestic violence law in Canada, asking them, you know, whether they think that emotional abuse is a form of abuse, whether, you know, if your spouse is beating you, do you have to stay until you find somewhere else to leave, or can you go somewhere else? Is it okay to hit your wife? Is it okay to hit your kids? Just stuff like that. And a lot of them don't know. A lot of them a lot of them answered very confidently. Some of them answered very confidently incorrectly. And a lot of them just kind of shrank back and hesitated and weren't sure. Some of the work that I've been doing personally in immigration, and my particular interest is I want to help victims of domestic violence, and particularly where domestic violence intersects with immigration. So, you know, women who are afraid to lose their immigration status because their husband is abusive or their spouse is abusive, and they think that if they leave, they'll lose their status. There is definitely a gap as well there in terms of knowledge of the laws and knowledge of the opportunities and knowledge of the resources and their rights as well.
Marie and I were talking about this earlier with the conditional permanent residence. Do you know about that?
I know a little bit about it,
As I understand it, I don't know if Marie, you want to jump in because you're doing research.
Yeah, from my understanding, though, the conditional permanent residence has been, like, eliminated by the government in 2017. So we were just talking about that, how, like, insane it was that that was actually in place, because it just put women in such a vulnerable situation. So,
yeah. Like, if they came here as a, I guess, a dependent with, like, their partner, then they couldn't leave their partner for, I think it was 2 years. Yeah. And the idea behind it was that it was to stop people from coming over pretending to be in a relationship, right? To get into Canada. But at the same time, it was, like, forcing people to stay in this relationship.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good thing that they've gotten rid of it.
Yeah. But it's just, like, why did that exist in the first place? Definitely. Like, it calls to a lot of issues that exist.
So. I think a lot of the big issues right now is, like, prioritizing possible fraud over very real safety issues that are way more common than the actual, you know, so-called fraud. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, that's an ongoing thing with ODSP, with welfare, with everything all the time. So, yeah, I would argue from my perspective that, you know, even if the removal of that means that one person can get out in an abusive situation, even if it means that 1,000 people will abuse the system, it's worth it to me. Because
Definitely.
Yeah. No one should have to stay in that.
I know there's, like, an exclusion. If you were in an abusive relationship, then it wouldn't apply to you. But then who...
Then you'd have to report the abuse. Yeah, exactly. And
just as, like, very underreported. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many other factors. Yeah.
All right. So... next question. What do you think can be done to further help women, immigrant women in Canada, in Ontario, Windsor, wherever? Like, you're already helping, obviously, with W5, but what else do you think that we can be doing overall?
I think childcare is key. So another personal example, when my boyfriend and his family moved from Colombia, he was 3 years old. So he was too young to be in kindergarten in school all day. So when his mom started taking classes offered by an immigration agency in Toronto, they provided free childcare for my little 3-year-old boyfriend while his mom was taking the classes. And she was able to complete the programming and get a job in less than a year. Had that service not been available for her, I think it would have been an entirely different story. And childcare is so expensive.
For sure.
Yeah, so it's honestly it's cheaper usually
to not work.
Yeah, that's exactly. What, that's exactly what
and it's unfortunate because then, you know, immigrant women don't have the opportunity to take advantage of all the opportunities that Canada has to offer them. So I think childcare is in my opinion the key sticking point there.
Very good point. Yep.
Yes, I am a big proponent of free childcare. I think childcare is the key to a lot of things. That's pretty much where I'm at. Childcare, just, you know, giving women the opportunities, because it's the same thing again with gendered parenting roles again and again and again, right? The men can go out and it's fine for, you know, dad to be late from work. And there's not really any, like, stigma attached to that. It's just like dad working to bring home the bacon. It's a weird expression. But, you know, as soon as there's that weird double standard where as soon as it's like if it's the woman that's the breadwinner, it's like, well, what about your kids? Like, don't you care about connecting with your children? Like, don't you think that your mothering duties should come first or whatever? Gross.
Yeah. That's why we're all here in law school trying to get a degree.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I know, like, I have know so many people in law school who have kids. And I mean, I find it freaking amazing. And a lot of you need supportive partners for that. Like, it's 100%. It would be impossible to do that alone, I would think. And if anyone listening to this has done that alone, you are a superhero. Oh, yeah.
Kudos.
Childcare.
Yeah.
And better dissemination of information. Just even in terms of, like, as an immigration welcome package. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, what other things does everyone get when they immigrate?
I guess, like, looping it back to the law, just even something like a pamphlet, like, about key critical legal services, what you can access if you need to report an incident of intimate partner violence.
Yeah. Something that's available in lots of languages.
Exactly. Yeah, because, you know, in the few interviews that I've done, one of our questions is that we ask, what information did you receive about the legal system in Canada when you came here, and a lot of women say nothing.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And then it's, you know, they're left to their own devices to go online and search, and who knows what, you know, sources they're looking at, if they're actually credible, you know, so.
They're told how to apply for OHIP and where to find a family doctor. And like schools and stuff, but in terms of legal services, nothing. Like, why not just include that?
That's so shocking. Like, I would always think before hearing this that they would have some sort of information. Like, you just assume.
More information about immigration law in general, I think would be good for the general population too. There's
so many misconceptions about immigration,
especially now I'm taking immigration law. Half of what I heard is wrong. But I think that would definitely help. And like the stereotyping or prejudice against people, like honestly, education it goes a long way in helping against that, I think.
Education for everybody.
Absolutely. And that's why W5 I think is so awesome. You know, small room, a lot of services for a lot of women, bridging the gaps, informing. You can bring your kids there. So many cute little ones running around all the time.
Yeah,
it's a special, special gem in the small city of Windsor, Ontario.
I feel like that's a great place to end this. Great point. Do you guys have anything else you want to add? Any small story, nothing?
Do you have any small stories?
Not really. I'm just really grateful for the opportunity.
Thank you guys for having us.
Oh, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for coming.
You guys have great radio voices.
Do we? I don't know. I've been trying to work on mine.
All three of you. No,
you too.
I think yours is great.
Oh, God. Thank you.
But I think we have similar speech patterns, so I might be biased.
If Tasha thinks I'm good, I'm good.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break for some closing remarks.
The Green Bean Cafe is a hybrid space for artists, academics, and any others looking for a safe and open atmosphere to hang out, meet up, or do work. We offer a full food and drink menu with daily specials. And with a wide range of weekly events, the Green Bean Cafe is sure to fill the void. The Green Bean Cafe, supporting Pockets Full of Change since 2009. Located at 2320 Wyandotte Street West. Find us online at greenbeancoffee.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit. I'm Marie.
And I'm Erin. Thank you again to the student volunteers, Tasha and Colleen, who came out and gave an awesome interview. Really appreciate it. We just want to end off this show with a bit more focus on Windsor. So we found some really cool statistics, immigration statistics specific to Windsor. So this one here is, again, Statistics Canada. It was reported in the Windsor Star. According to the 2016 census, 27.8% of Windsor's population is immigrant. So that's compared to about 22% of the Canadian population. So, yeah, we are quite a bit of an immigrant hub. I think a lot of people want to come to Windsor. Windsor stands out in a few areas. So, like, the place of birth of people who come to Windsor is a bit different from the average in Canada. In Windsor, we see, it looks like the top place of birth was from Iraq. Number two was Syria. Number three was the U.S. And that makes sense being on a border city. The Windsor Star also reported that more people come to Windsor as refugees than most places in Canada. So about 40% of immigrants to Windsor are refugees, which is quite high compared to 15% for Ontario and 12% for Canada. One issue that we found that was kind of specific to Windsor was a housing crisis, and I think a lot of Windsorites relate to this. The like rather skyrocketing prices of rentals and purchasing houses in Windsor recently. And this makes it even more difficult for immigrants and refugees to really, make a place in Windsor, right. Unfortunately. There was an article here in the Windsor Star. They gave a bunch of examples from different families who were having this issue due to a shortage of rental properties. And landlords often, they can be picky about their tenants. And I guess, to be fair, unfortunately, people do discriminate against immigrants, although they shouldn't and they're not supposed to. But there's lots of barriers for refugees because they lack credit history. They haven't been in the country as long. Even accents, people use that against immigrants. So the Windsor Star gave an example of a Nigerian family and how hard they found it was to find a place to live. So originally they came from Nigeria, and they were fleeing a forced circumcision that would be put on the daughter of the family. So they fled the country, the mother and her children. They landed in the U.S., and then they came into Canada seeking asylum. First, they were in Montreal, but because of, the language barrier, they decided to come to Ontario, specifically Windsor. And by that time, the housing prices were getting higher, starting to skyrocket a bit, and they end up having to live in hotels for quite a while. And you can imagine how that puts people in even a more precarious situation, right? Not even having, a place to live, a place you know you can stay. I think that will make it even more difficult for families. And I don't mean it to sound negative at all because, these stories aren't all, negative or difficult. There are great stories of success. The Windsor Star reported, this is pretty recent, May 2018, about the success of Syrian refugees in Windsor. So when, Canada and Windsor took in Syrian refugees, they gave these great examples in this article about families who have been doing well. One started their own bakery. And it's just a really positive experience that the families get to stay together and continue to experience their culture, but also not have to experience the difficulties they had back home.
I feel like that's what it comes down to, just coming here to Canada and having that source of support in whatever way it may be, whether you're immigrating here and you already have family, so you have support, or government services, W5. That's what they need when they come here, and that's what we need to strive to improve.
Yeah, support's so important. And these stories that make me, I think, more thankful for my citizenship, because I never really thought about it before law school. The fact that since I was born in Canada, I had Canadian citizenship just by virtue of being born here, and all the rights and privileges that come with that. I never realized how difficult it is for some people to attain those same rights that I was just lucky enough to be born here with.
So we've come to the end of our hour, and we just want to end with a quote by Dalai Lama that we feel really encapsulates this entire show and what we've been trying to get through our conversations and through what we saw in W5 in that interview. So, and it is that love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries, and without them, humanity cannot survive.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to CJAM 99.1 anywhere and anytime by going to cjam.ca, or you can follow them on social media. This is Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio. Please catch us next week, Friday from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. My name is Erin. It was a pleasure speaking with you today.
And my name is Marie. Thanks for listening, everyone.
is gonna put some love in your life. Don't you really wanna know how it feels? Everybody wanna see what it's like. We even wanna be inside, it ain't lies. We all know there's better things in this life.